Welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around St. Albans and from further afield. Now, in this hot weather, you might have retreated to the shade of one of our wonderful local woods, somewhere like Simon's Hide. But you might recall that Simon's Hide is under threat from being surrounded by a housing estate, proposals for which were included in the Wellin and Hatfield draft local plan. Now, Save Simon's Hide is the campaign group set up to oppose these proposals, and this dry weather has highlighted a potential problem: sinkholes. John Gardner of Save Simon's Hide joined me to explain. John, thank you for joining me. So St. Albans is no stranger to sinkholes. How did you find out about the sinkholes at Simon's Hide?
Well, some local contacted us before the objections were put in and said they believed there were some sinkholes there. So with a cursory examination, we looked at it and one of our committee members said, yes, he believed they were sinkholes. We then found that there was a local and world-renowned expert living nearby who very kindly did an initial assessment for us, and later this year has now done a more detailed assessment, and this is what we've submitted to Wellin and Hatfield Council.
Okay, so the sinkholes in St. Albans, they were caused, I believe, by mining for brick clay, I think. Is that what the Simon's Hide sinkholes are caused by?
Well, we believe that they're naturally occurring sinkholes, and from what I'm told, the geology of the area of most of Hertfordshire is susceptible to sinkholes anywhere.
Okay, anywhere. So these are natural ones then. So how big are these sinkholes?
Well, some of them are quite enormous. We did a walk around there a little while ago, and it's quite tremendous. You would be quite anxious if you had your children playing there. We could be talking about 12 metres across, and they're three or four quite large and potentially challenging sinkholes.
Okay, so can you see evidence of them from the surface?
Oh, yes. If you're walking past there, it's a very large hollow in the ground.
Okay. And actually, your house is near there, isn't it? I assume that your house is safe.
Well, yeah, my house has been there for 400 years, so I'm not too concerned yet.
Okay, fair enough. That sounds quite good, though, doesn't it? So this extreme weather, this has highlighted your sinkhole problem, hasn't it? Why is that?
Well, I think as everyone can see from their gardens, the earth is cracking and moving, and as the waterbeds dry out, and there is quite a lot of water movement around the whole of the Simon's Hide area. I mean, some of it has been quite marshy in the past. As the water gets drained away or dried out, then there's a risk that this will exacerbate the problems, especially if they're naturally occurring. Clearly, something like this must have caused a problem in the past.
Okay, and I suppose with the climate change predicted to cause more extreme weather, presumably the risk from weather like this will increase, won't it?
Well, I'd imagine so. I mean, this is something where I have to rely on the experts because I'm a long way from really knowing the detail here. But yes, I think we're all concerned that people may or may not move into the area and found that they've got a real problem, like some of the people we heard about last year in St Albans.
Indeed, yes, that's right. OK, so can you just remind us briefly what stage your Save Simon's Hide campaign has reached?
Well, we're waiting for quite a bit of work from the council. After stage two, which was in February this year...
This is the stages that go through to finalise the local plan.
Yes, the government have put in, as they do for every plan, an inspector to review the plan to make sure that it's sound and look at various other criteria. And he's asked some very good questions. We've been quite encouraged, at least by the questions that he's asking. And one of the things was, have you carefully considered the Green Belt and looked at which bits of the Green Belt you want to use? Or have you just responded to the first offer by a developer to make use of the Green Belt to build some more houses?
Right.
And I don't think they could give a satisfactory answer, so they've now gone off to do a Green Belt review, which we've been waiting for nearly 2 months now, and hopefully will give us some kind of clear answers.
OK, and presumably the evidence that you've put forward with respect to sinkholes, is this going to be all part of the review or part of the process?
Yes, it's been submitted as part of the formal evidence. The inspector has decided to look at a number of the contentious sites separately. So we're hoping that when he does stage five sometime this autumn, we will have quite a detailed review of all of the issues surrounding it, because so far we've been talking in generalities, and we've been very clearly directed not to talk in detail about Simonside yet. But sometime this autumn we hope to get our chance to actually explain why we think it's inappropriate.
Excellent. Well, John, I do hope you'll come back and keep us up to date with what's happening with the campaign. Thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you very much, Amanda.
And I was talking there to John Gardner from the Save Simonside campaign. And John asked me just to remind you that their campaign, in particular employing all these experts, is not cheap. And if you are able to support them, even with a very small donation, it would be very, very welcome. And that any donations can be made via their Save Simonside website. So big thank you for that. Now, the kids are off school now, and you might be trying to be thinking of creative ways of keeping them away from the screen without it costing you a fortune. Well, you could start, actually, by going blackberry picking. They're ripe and delicious around St. Albans right now, and they're lovely and juicy in spite of... I thought they might be a bit dry because of the dry weather, but actually, no, they're wonderful. Now, I can't think of a healthier, lower food miles, more organic, more delicious food. The ones I picked just ate them and ate them raw by themselves, but they'd have been... would have been lovely with ice cream or perhaps whizzed up into a smoothie or a shake. So yeah, a bit of blackberry picking, nice easy thing to do. Or if blackberry picking isn't your thing, then how about something useful in the garden? Now, we've heard on Environment Matters before about the great work that some people around St. Albans are doing for this adorable threatened animal, but there's much more to be done for the hedgehog. So how about building a hedgehog house? Now, the charity Hedgehog Street recently published the results of research that they did into exactly what kind of house our spiky friends prefer. So you can make sure that your hedgehog house is hog heaven. I spoke to Emily Wilson, the hedgehog officer from Hedgehog Street, to find out more. Emily, thank you for joining me. So making a hedgehog house, it sounds like a really nice thing to do in the garden with the kids. But, I mean, you can buy some nice hedgehog houses. Why is a homemade hedgehog house better?
So we found out last year from our National Hedgehog Housing Census, the first of its kind, that hedgehogs seem to prefer these homemade houses. It can be a variety of different houses, from a box flipped over with a hole cut in it, or to these lovely, wonderful wooden ones that people have made from all bits and bobs that they found in the garden. We've even seen as fantastic designs like Tudor houses being made for hedgehogs, but... It tends to be that they just love all these kind of weird and wonderful homemade houses.
Well, this does show quite a taste on the part of the hedgehogs, liking something individual and different.
Definitely, and I think it really is about the features. People have got tunnels that sort of stop things like cats and foxes sneaking in, and also kind of providing lovely bits of bedding and things like that. It just makes their life so much easier.
Okay, so you found some other interesting tips too, didn't you? Where did your research show that it was best to site your hedgehog house?
So our good colleagues at the University of Reading spent about a few months going through 5,000 records that we got back from people across the whole of the UK who all have hedgehog houses, and they found out so many interesting things. So we now know that it's really best to keep your hedgehog house in the back garden. Doesn't need to be that far from the house. They seem to not be too spooked by us. They've got very much used to human presence. Having it sheltered, especially in away from the midday sun like we have at the moment, and just under shrubs is fine, or against a barrier like your fence and things like that, as that's where they tend to travel along.
Okay, so I mean, you do have the idea that hedgehogs would just use a house in the winter for hibernating, but actually from what you're saying, it's more of a year-round use that it's important.
Definitely. Hedgehogs actually use nests for three different reasons. So they will have their daytime nests, which they'll be using right now as the sun's glaringly down in everyone's gardens. Hedgehogs are fast asleep, just resting for the day, and then they'll come out at night time because they're actually a nocturnal animal. They've also got some females that will be in their nests right now looking after their brand new litter of hoglets, which is what we call baby hedgehogs. And then finally, over winter, they'll make much fancier, more robust nests. which we call hibernacular, and this is where they'll actually hibernate, and they'll be really strong, durable structures, lots of waterproofing, and perfect for them to spend months in over winter.
That's great. So we can be rest assured that if a hedgehog does like a house that we've made, that they really will make full use of it. But you also found out that we have to be quite patient, don't we?
Definitely. It'll take some time for the hedgehogs to find your hedgehog house, and once they find it, they'll probably move straight on in. That's why it's really important that hedgehogs are able to get into your garden. So just making a little hole at the bottom of the fence, no bigger than a CD case, is enough, and they'll be able to travel from garden to garden and find your garden and move into your hedgehog house.
Well, that sounds like a lovely idea. So if we did want to make a hedgehog house, what are the sort of basics if we were doing something with the kids, not too difficult perhaps?
So on our website, www.hedgehogstreet.org, we've got some downloadable instructions called Give a Hog a Home, and you can download these and find out how to make your own hedgehog house. We've got a simple DIY version, which is essentially a hole or a hole cut into a planter or milk crate or plastic storage box that you might not be using anymore, just flipped over. Or we've got a trickier one, which is basically with pieces of wood, and you would need to do some kind of a manual handling to get that all fixed together.
That's not the Tudor one, is it?
It won't be as detailed as the Tudor one, but a nice straightforward one, just with any pieces of wood that you've got lying around.
Okay, that sounds like a nice little project. And how about other things we might be able to do to help hedgehogs? As you say, it's that they've got hoglets at this time of year, and it's a bit hot, isn't it?
Definitely, and especially, you know, if you want them to move into your hedgehog house, it will really help if you're putting food and water out. At the moment, the weather has been quite hot and hedgehogs are really getting dehydrated, so just even a dish of water alone is going to be really beneficial. But if you do want to put food out, the best thing to recommend is wet dog and cat food. You can even put out dry cat biscuits, just make them a little bit soggy, and that will really help when they're dehydrated. But that's all they need, really. And, yeah, no bread or milk, though, please. They actually can't handle dairy like we used to think they did. So, yeah, no bread or milk. Just stick to the dog and cat food.
Lovely. Excellent. Well, that sounds like some really practical tips to help our hedgehogs at quite a difficult time of year. Emily, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you.
And I was talking there to Emily Wilson from Hedgehog Street. And a tip from local hedgehog enthusiast Jill Priest, who we've had on Environment Matters before, is that if you'd like to put food out for hedgehogs but you don't want the foxes to eat it, if you put the food underneath an old wooden pallet, they're sort of quite hollow, aren't they, then the hedgehogs and their hoglets, they can get to the food, but the foxes can't. So that's a good tip there. And do take a look at my blog on the Radio Verulam website, www.radioverulam.com, about how you and the kids can do some valuable citizen science by spending 15 minutes in the garden or in the park or in the wood taking part in the big butterfly count. It's lots of fun, it's great for your well-being, and it's a really useful thing to help find information about our threatened butterflies. Now, you might also be interested in the National Trust's Ashridge Adventure Sessions for Children. Their education team will be running twice weekly outdoor activity sessions during the summer holidays. Each week they will feature a different activity, and the sessions will run on Tuesdays and Thursday, 10:30 till 12 or 1:30 till 3. There will be all sorts of things, pond dipping to mini beast hunting and den building, and there's always something fun for Average Ashridge that you can always do with the family afterwards as well. And the sessions are aimed at children between 4 and 10, and they also include a nature-themed craft in the visitor centre classroom. It's only £4, and you can book it on the National Trust website. If you just search for National Trust Ashridge, you'll be able to see it there. And there was plenty of availability when I looked this morning, so do get on and book that. There'll be a lovely thing to do, and as I say, Ashridge is always a nice place to go for a walk. Now, as part of the National Garden Open scheme this weekend, 49 Tansfield Road in Hemel Hempstead is open. This is a small town garden. It's decorated with over 450 plants together with ever-present sound of water. I thought you'd like that. Creating a welcome oasis of calm and probably nice and cool as well for visitors to savour. There's narrow paths which divide, leading the visitor on a voyage of discovery of the garden's many features. And the owners regularly experiment with garden planting schemes, which ensures the garden garden alters from year to year. There's water features, there's metal sculptures, there's wall art, there's mirrors throughout the garden. And as a time and cost-saving experiment, they're experimenting with different things in hanging baskets as well, and particularly with things normally used for ground cover. So actually, particularly in this dry weather, it'd be interesting to see how they have managed that. So that's 9 Tansfield Drive, Hemel Hempstead, and that is open on Sunday, this Sunday, the 5th of August, from 1:30 till 5. Admission is £3.50. Children are free. And of course, you'd like to know that there's homemade teas. So, so that's a lovely thing to do on Sunday. And then something else, it's coming up next week, and then repeated again on the 6th of September. So Thursday the 9th of August and Thursday the 6th of September. I thought you might like to hear about, no, I mean, I'm not saying this for any particular reason, not just you, but there's a wild gin tasting. I thought you might like that. So it's an event that's organised by the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust over at Tring Reservoirs. And the idea is that you take an early evening stroll around the edge of Willstone Reservoir and discovering this beautiful nature reserve with your guide, Joshua Wells, who's the Trust Reserves Officer for Tring Reservoirs, and then you return to the Puddingstone Distillery to enjoy the delights of locally produced gin and learn about how the gin is produced here. And you can enjoy 2 gin cocktails and samples of the Puddingstone Distillery's Campfire Gin. And the Puddingstone Distillery, it's what they've done is they've got together with the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust to make their own very special gin infused with the edible flowers of the invasive Himalayan balsam plant, which has been removed by volunteers from the reserves this summer. So that's a really nice partnership with the two of them working together, and this unusual gin you'll be able to taste on that gin tasting evening. So I say that's next Thursday, the 9th of August, 7 till 10, but repeated again on Thursday, the 6th of September. It's £25 per person. Given that you get 2 cocktails, that's not actually too bad, is it? And it is, of course, adults aged 18 and over only. And you can find more details about that and make your booking on the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust website. Now, lots of you have already listened to recent Environment Matters programmes about the new waste incinerator plans near Harpens, and that's been very popular. And remember, you can listen now by just going to www.radioverulam.com/environment, where you can listen to, you'll see some of our podcasts there, also blogs. And then if you go to the podcast page of the Radio Verulam website, you'll be able to find all the podcasts from Radio Verulam. So do take a listen there. I'll be back at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.